This is Leafs Breakfast.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, a day off yesterday, a day off today. They get ready for a big one tomorrow night down at the bank. It's the Leafs and the Bruins, and maybe the Leafs can close the gap just a little bit on Boston, who remain 11 points up on Toronto with a game in hand. This is Leafs Breakfast here on TSN 1050. But, Coco, the big news in the hockey world, a big-time deal yesterday made between the Islanders and the Canucks. Trade season officially upon
finally
us.
How excited are you, CJ?
Yeah, Chris Johnson, you must be fired up this morning.
Yeah, I was fired up last night, too. But, you know, a little surprising, maybe, that it comes this soon, but I'm with you. It does maybe kick some action off, and I wonder if, you know, I don't hate the return for Vancouver, but I do think it might signal that this could be a bit of a buyer's market, and so we'll see if anything else spins out of this.
CJ, do you believe the Maple Leafs had any deals on the table for Horvat with Vancouver at any point yesterday?
No, I don't have any reason to believe that, no.
Okay. CJ, if the Maple Leafs were to have been in the running for Bo Horvat, and you look at the deal that the Islanders made with the players that went back to Vancouver, what would that trade look like on a Maple Leafs perspective?
Well, I don't know if they have the pieces, you know, truly.
We were talking earlier, like, Beauvillier would probably be like a Kerfoot, Ratu would probably be like a Robertson or a Hervonen, however they value those prospects. And the first round pick is clearly not as desirable as what the Islanders could potentially offer.
Right. And, you know, I'm not sure the Leafs would be or want to be in the business of trading a first round pick for a rental player either. So, I mean, I just don't think this made a lot of sense for Toronto. I mean, like, the key part that comes at it from the Islanders end of things is that they see him as someone they want to sign to an extension. So they gave up, you know, three pieces there, but they do it with the idea that they're going to be able to sign Bo Horvat to an extension. And I don't know that the Leafs would be in that position given the kind of season he's having. And, you know, who knows? His next contract could be $8.5-$9 million a year. I mean, obviously with the players the Leafs have, that there wouldn't be room for that.
So I was just going to ask you, so is that the type of contract that you envision Bo Horvat signing, something that's $8.5 or higher, maybe in the nines when you're looking at measuring it up against Barzal, considering the commitment the Islanders made? And I guess the other question I have, too, is if the Islanders can't come to a decision with Horvat before the trade deadline, can you envision a scenario where they flip him again?
I suppose anything's possible, right? He doesn't have any no trade protection, but, you know, I don't believe that was what was in their minds. You know, I think that, you know, we've seen this before, right? I remember a few years ago, Jean-Gabriel Pageau got traded from Ottawa to the Islanders when he was on an expiring contract, you know, pretty promptly signed an extension. You know, Lou Lamoriello has been at this game a long, long time. And you know, I have to believe that he thinks there's a good chance that there's an extension here to be reached in making this deal. I just don't think he would be giving up the assets he did without that in place. And you know, as for where the number lands, you know, I could see it starting maybe with a nine, but certainly 8.5. I mean, you look at guys like, you know, Tkachuk signed for what, 9.5. I don't think he's getting, doesn't have the comparables to get that high. You know, and really, Bo Horvat's in the driver's seat here because if he doesn't like the offer from the Islanders, he can just, you know, go to July 1st and he's having a pretty good season that he'd be taken to the open market.
Chris, how robust was the market for Bo Horvat? How many teams were interested in him, and how close were other teams to acquiring him before ultimately the Islanders and Vancouver were able to pull the trigger on that deal yesterday?
Well, I think if we go back a couple months, you know, since his name's been out there as a trade chip, you know, there was a lot of interest. There was, you know, a lot of teams phoning to see what it might take. A lot of teams probably heard the price and didn't get too much farther in the conversation. You know, in terms of the last few days, as Vancouver finished out this deal, I think you were down to a small handful. I believe Detroit was one of them that was at least having conversations with Vancouver, you know, pretty late. you know, there's some talk that Seattle is there. I don't know if they were there right till the end. I think Boston was kind of kicking around a little bit. But, you know, there weren't a lot of teams, frankly, that could meet this price. And I think one thing some other teams were scared off by, not just the price to acquire him, but, you know, the season he's having, you know, understanding what he's likely to sign his next contract for. I mean, if you're acquiring Bo Horvat, knowing you can extend him, it's a different sort of conversation than if you're just buying, you know, the last 30 games of the season.
So, CJ, as we see the first domino fall here with Bo Horvat being traded, where do teams go next now in the open market? Teams that potentially you just mentioned missed out on him. What's the next desirable piece that teams will focus their attention on?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the biggest name available, I think it's now Timo Meier. It doesn't mean that has to happen well in advance of March 3rd. You know, I think Vancouver's in a unique spot. I mean, first of all, Bo Horvat spoke yesterday about how hard the season's been. I think he wanted this to be over sooner rather than later, and the Canucks, you know, tried to do right by him. He was their captain and spent a long time with that organization. You know, Vancouver's also got some other moves it would like to make and other players that it's hoping to sell, you know, before March 3rd. So I think it's just from a practical standpoint, it's good to get some moves done early. If you're looking to make multiple moves, you don't want to leave them all until the last couple of days because it can be a lot to juggle. You know, and it'd just be interesting to see for me that there's so many big name forwards, right, that are out there. I mean, Meier might not be a big name in these parts, but if you look at the seasons he's had, a pretty good player, still in the prime of his career. You've got some of the older players like Ryan O'Reilly, Tarasenko, potentially Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews. You know, I don't know if there's going to be enough first-round picks and premium assets moved to see all those guys traded, and so I wonder if over some time here, we see the prices go down on some of those players if it's going to be a robust trade deadline.
Chris Johnston, our guest, TSN Hockey Insider. You mentioned O'Reilly, who's currently injured. He's expected back in the middle of February. Patrick Kane is having a significant down year by his standards, and he's got as lofty standards as anybody in the National Hockey League. Do you think the returns for those two players, considering the circumstances, the injury to O'Reilly, the down year for Kane, would be in line with what Horvat was acquired for?
I think it's going to be less myself. I mean, we'll see how it goes. I mean, the Kane situation is unique in that he has a full no movement clause too, and as of this point in time, you know, I'm not 100% certain that he's going to move that or knows where he wants to go. You know, I think that there's a little nuance there. You know, as for O'Reilly, I mean, you're talking to players that are, what, 6-7 years older than Bo Horvat, certainly having much less productive seasons. You know, O'Reilly, in his case, hasn't played, you know, for the last few weeks after suffering a broken foot. I think that, you know, I'm not saying there won't be a market for them and that there's no chance they're moved, but I just don't know that their teams will be in a position to ask for the, you know, you're not selling the 5-year, you know, 5 years ago version of these players. You're selling the current version. And so, you know, I don't think that we'll see them match these returns. I wouldn't be surprised to see Timo Meier get a return that we think is even bigger than what the Canucks got for Horvat, just because he's a restricted free agent and, you know, you're not buying him strictly as a rental. And he's also having a great year, but, this might be one of the high watermark trades we see, believe it or not, leading this deadline. I do believe it's a buyer's market.
There has been speculation that Timo Meier has been linked to the Maple Leafs. Can you confirm that he's a piece that they could potentially be looking at is to fill their top six role?
I don't know that they're the favorite, to be honest, you know, because the teams that really like him, you know, teams like Carolina, New Jersey, you know, they like him with the idea that you're trading for him and then you're finding a way to extend him. And sort of, as I said previously with Bo Horvat, I don't know that the Leafs are in that position. I think if you're just talking strictly for a player, they could plug in their lineup. Of course, you know, there's a lot to like about Timo Meier, but I don't know that he ticks all the boxes because of the kind of salary he's going to command beyond the season. I mean, he's got a $10 million qualifying offer for next year. Even if you were to sign him long-term and have him forgo that offer, he's probably getting something close to $9 million a year. You know, so I'd be surprised if the Leafs emerged as one of the main teams in the bidding there. But, you know, that's why we'll sit back and wait and see. I think that they're probably looking for either, you know, more cost-controlled players. So if the players have term, have, you know, much less owed on their cap, or maybe they go down the rental market as well, and you can just jam someone in for the rest of the season, but you're not really looking at a long-term kind of acquisition.
It's really interesting that as highly touted as Timo Meier is, why the San Jose Sharks would be willing to part with a guy like that when they're a team that's rebuilding.
It's a fair point.
I mean, as a young player, don't you want to rebuild around players like that? Like, I don't understand the idea behind moving him.
Well, I think it comes down to the fact it's, you know, a relatively new front office with Mike Greer. You know, they get one chance to kind of repaint the office itself. You know, they've already traded Brent Burns. They have a number of high-priced contracts, you know, everyone from Hurdle to Couture, you know, obviously Eric Carlson and guys like Vlasic. So I think that they want to ship out money in general and start a rebuild. And it's not that Timo Meier isn't a good player and probably will be, but he might not be a dominant player when they're good again. It might be 3 or 4 years, right? And so if you give him $9 million a year, you've just got another big contract that's going to be tough to move as time goes along. And so I think that they're going to make a tough decision most likely and trade him. I mean, they haven't completely closed the door on signing him. But I think it's likely that they're moving in to sort of usher along their rebuild. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them try to move some of those other guys. It's just that they all have such big cap hits. It's going to be difficult.
Carlson seems like more of an off-season trade than in-season trade.
The complications surrounding that, making a move like that in-season, seem almost insurmountable. But then again, Carlson leading the NHL in even strength points as a defenseman. I'm sure there's a lot of teams out there that could potentially view him as a guy who could be a big-time difference maker. Again, Chris Johnston, our guest, TSN Hockey Insider. Final game before the All-Star break and then the bye week for the Maple Leafs kind of in conjunction. And they're taking on the Boston Bruins tomorrow night, the best team in the NHL. And we've talked about what the Leafs could be looking for ahead of the deadline. Maybe a top six forward, maybe a bottom pair defenseman, maybe another goaltender to pair with Ilya Samsonov. What about the Bruins? Are they the big game hunting? You think they'll be looking for a real impact piece? Because, I mean, this team has virtually been flawless all year long, top to bottom. It's hard to really improve upon perfection, but they have lost three games in a row, so who knows?
They are struggling.
So what do you think they're trying to do before the deadline?
Well, here's what we know about Don Sweeney. I mean, he's been pretty aggressive, right? A couple years ago, he got Taylor Hall at the deadline. He got Hampus Lindholm from Anaheim last year before the deadline.
Extended both.
And here's the problem. And stop me if you've heard this before. They literally have, at this point in time, basically no cap space. So any money that Boston brings in, they're going to have to ship money out as of right now. I mean, they could have a serious injury between now and the deadline, and maybe someone's on LTIR, and it's a different cap picture. But as it's lining up now, the Bruins are just a team that does not have a lot of flexibility to take the kind of swing they have in the past. Now, they do have, you know, a couple players buried in the minors that are counting against them, you know, Mike Riley and Chris Wagner. Maybe they find a way to ship those guys out. I mean, There's going to be a way for them to make a trade, but I just don't know how sizable of a trade it's going to be. But, you know, the good news, of course, is that they're humming along pretty well. They don't have many glaring needs. I think that they would look at another forward. You know, I think they're pretty comfortable with their defense. But, you know, unless something changes dramatically in terms of an injury between now and the deadline, I think that they're going to be adding sort of depth pieces that don't grab any big headlines just because they probably don't really need it, and they just, the cap won't allow them to do it.
Well, at least we got a trade in the
yeah, break more, CJ. So that was fun yesterday.
We
got to
keep them going, and it sounds like there'll be a lot of action before the March 3rd trade deadline. You'll be all over it for us here at TSN. Thanks for doing this, Chris.
All right, boys. Have a great day.
You too. Yeah, that's our hockey insider, Chris Johnston. Big Cowboys fan as well. Big news there in Dallas. Kellen Moore out of Dallas. Now the OC for the Chargers.
Good spot for him.
Great landing spot for Kellen Moore. He can't really find a better
on the hot seat.
Yeah, I don't know if Kellen Moore would take over as head coach. I feel like that's Sean Payton's job next year after
you think
the
so?
Chargers flame out.
I mean,
in the
why wouldn't they do it
again
this year if they want him? What are they going to wait one more year for?
Yeah, maybe they can never really afford Sean Payton. I don't know, but yeah.
It was who's the owner there? Spanos.
Spanos. Yeah.
I mean, if everything you're saying about him is true, where he's cheap and doesn't want to spend.
Well, cheap is a relative term. When you own an NFL team, there's only so cheap so cheap you can be.
That's the verdict out on him.
Yeah,
so
it is. Anyways, we'll talk some NFL with Bruce Murray from SiriusXM NFL Radio. The Brock Purdy situation, man, it is just a very sad one.
Speaking of NFL, when we come back after the break, I want to get into you of the newest conspiracy theory that was released
yesterday. DeMar Hamlin?
No. About the NFL being rigged.
Oh, the NFL is rigged. Okay, I knew it had something to do with officials. All right, we'll get into that. Hour 3 of First Up next.